Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Magical Egypt Live. This is Venice McNeil, and today I have with me a woman who is very dear to my heart, Miss Shauna Holm. Welcome, my dear.
Thank you, sweetie. So happy to be here.
I am so incredibly happy to have you here today because we are talking about your new book. But before I get to that, I just want to say that I'm so blessed because we have known each other now for, gosh, I don't even know how many years. And so I really do consider you a dear friend, my love. And it was so interesting reading your book because I kind of know your stories. And so seeing them in written form was really, really interesting to me. But it's the poetry that kind of is the thing that absolutely blows my mind. I always get tingles when I read it or hear it. So, darling, do you have a copy of the book that you can show everyone?
I do. Yeah, it comes in soft cover and hardcover. But that is the hardcover. And I'm very fortunate because I have a small publisher and I was able to use the image that I wanted. And this image is by Edmond Dulac. And it was for a series of Edgar Allan Poe poems. And, oh gosh, forget the name of this poem. Annabel Lee. And so anyway, but the image, I found this image years ago. And the way she has her hand on my chest, I will do that often. Like if I'm on her chest, if I'm just touched by something. Anyway, it's just so, and it's green. It's a green book, you know, it's a fairy realm book.
Oh, yes, there's me. That's the blurb that I wrote. I'm so glad. I'm so blessed I got to do that. And like, I mean, it really is. It's a great book. And the colored version is absolutely beautiful, right? But I think what's really important is that the poetry itself is so moving and so wise, right? It kind of blows my mind. And let me ask you, does it affect you when you're actually channeling this poetry yourself?
Yes. When I was researching for this book, because the book discusses the beautiful fairy lore of the Celts and also the training of the seer poets of old Ireland. And in my research, I discovered that the original kind of quote unquote shamans were poets. And so their job was to go into these high trance states and access the other world where the she are, many other beings, and then bring through those messages poetically. And so these are incantatory channeled, if you will, message. I mean, they're from the other world. And so then, you know, it's brought into this world. And it's not something I ever set out to do. It just happened organically. I'm almost at 13 years now apprenticing myself to the mushroom teachers. And but you know, things, when I was researching the seer poets, I was like, my God, their training went for 12 years. And so I had my first 12 months of monthly mushroom journeys. And then my apprenticeship, you know, it's been 12 years. It'll actually be 13 years this summer. But, you know, that book came around the 12 year mark.
So you're qualified now. You've done the training.
Well, you know, what's funny is my publisher interviewed me, Steve and Chris Crimmie. They're wonderful. And they have a little YouTube channel called Good Crack, C-R-A-I-C, the Gaelic word. And they were asking me about the file, because that's what these poets were called, file, F-I-L-I-D-H, plural, F-I-L-I, singular. And he was asking me about me being a file, and I said, no. Like, I don't think there's any file on the planet. I mean, there's beautiful poets. I mean, amazing, amazing poets. But the training they had was extraordinary. And they would train in darkness and through something called incubation. So they would start around Samhain, so in around Halloween, when the days were shorter, the nights were longer. And just before daybreak, they would be given their lessons. And then they would go into these houses of darkness and stew on the poetry. And so they were the shamans you know, of the Druids as well, but the Fila poets, these were seer poets. And so they were taught, of course, the grammar, the old stories. They all knew 350 different stories of the history and lineage, and each one was a novel, and it was all memorized. It was an oral tradition. Nothing was written down. So they had all of that, including they were taught law, and then the healing arts, and then around the eighth year, then they were taught the magical arts. And so they were taught something called Imbas Frosna. And Imbas means inspiration or illumination. And in Welsh, it's Awen. And so that's what they were seeking when they would go inward in silent darkness. And it's very possible they were working with maybe the Amanita muscaria. So in any case, and I think they were, but that's just my opinion, which you can take with a grain of salt. But there have been, Peter Lamborn Wilson wrote an excellent book called Plowing the Clouds, The Search for Irish Soma, comparing the stories of the Rig Veda with the lore of the Celts or the Gaels. And, you know, obviously they didn't speak candidly and frankly. It was all in riddle and metaphor. It was veiled, of course. And then there's also a very good article written by the scholar Aaron Rowan Laurie and Timothy White. This was written in the late 90s. It's called The Speckled Snake, Brother of Birch, Amanita Muscaria Motifs in Celtic Lore, I think it's called. And it's all about these stories of red berries, apples, speckled salmon, and magical hazelnuts. And then, of course, you also have these brews and cauldrons. And if you have ingest any of that, you are instantly transformed to knowing, having the knowledge of the ages and poetic eloquence. So there was something.
What's interesting is Mantic Chia actually talks about this thing called the dark room experience, where when you're in the dark for a while, you have a DMT trip. It's organic. So yeah, totally, I get it.
Yes, you see phosphenes, which are the geometric images.
So that's really interesting, isn't it? Why couldn't it be like all of the above? All of it, right? But what's really interesting to me is that the poetry that comes through you is so, as I said, warm and full of wisdom and humor as well. And I don't think it's something that you could just sit down and do intellectually, right? Like it flows through you.
Yeah, we've talked about this. Like if I just kind of try to do a poem, just like in my regular consciousness, I'm actually a pretty shitty poet. And I was telling you the story. It's so funny.
Tell the audience, because I love this story.
I was on the airplane to Tucson to visit my mother back in February or March. I forget when. Anyway, I was just feeling blue. And so I had my journal. And the plane is usually where, you know, I'm stuck. I'm not doing anything, right? So that's usually when they can reach me. But I wasn't feeling that at all. I just started to write a poem. And then the last line was like, and I have no one around me. Like, it was like such a pity pot, just shit poem. And then let me just find this, Venice. And so it was just so stupid. But sometimes, you know, you got to do these, right? And so, where is it? Oh, here it is. Okay, so no sooner do I finish that last line, then in comes the poetry. Like the voice came in, and this voice actually felt masculine. And also, I will say, because there's a line here talking about this, I was also feeling a lot of fear about bringing this book forth, because it's like putting my soul out there, you know, and the reality of that was also hitting me, and I was just kind of in a panic. So anyway, I write this stupid, shitty poem. And then that says, are you finished with that rhyme? Are you having a good time? Poor you feel and very scared, terrified to be so bared. Yet in this good book, magic rules, and you have entered a new school. 12 years are up, The bar is lifted. This next chapter you've been gifted. You will walk it with great care. In your dealings, be aware. More money on its way to you. In business, dear, you're far from through. The poetry is always near. Though you fret, we're always here. To lend a hand or give a wink, you've got to watch the way you think. That mind of yours gets in a whirl. Those wretched thoughts bellow and hurl their piercing arrows at your heart. They're undermining this new start. And then this is an astrologist who I adore, but he gave me a very grim kind of outlook on this year, which I've also been fretting about. And they said, though Robert is good at his art, not everything he says is smart. You hang on to his dark predictions to the point where you are fixin' to get ready for a fall. You are sure that one and all will shame and mark you as a fraud. We ask you in the name of God to end this fascination bleak. The timing asks you now to speak, and you have tempered well your words. It is time that you are heard. All of this has humbled you. It makes a palatable brew that you can feed the ones with ears and ably help their ship to steer. The acoustics of your field have had to learn to bend and yield. Only through maturity can you effectively see and carry yourself with the grace that couldn't keep up with the pace of how fast you've rushed into things. Now you'll see what patience brings.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, just amazing. What was the first line?
Are you finished with that rhyme?
Are you having a good time? That's so classic. I mean, that's like a bad Shauna. Get yourself together. Get your mind right, girl.
It's what I love, because they can do this, but with a wink and a smile, but they get the message across. Like, knock it off. Don't be a dumbass, you know, like, and I would invite anyone listening to consider this. I think of myself as an initiate. I will be an initiate for the rest of my life. And I know I'm a seer. And in the Irish call someone with the second sight. Now, I don't see spirits. I feel them, but I don't see them. But the second sight is, you know, you actually see them. It's called Anda Shela. But it's understood that they have a co-walker. And I love that expression, a co-walker. Like, we all, of course, we have some kind of spirit guardian with us. But I'm very, very aware now, thanks to all these years of cultivating relationship with these beings through the mushroom and beyond, that these are my co-walkers. They are the she. You know, there's different, many, many different groups. I mean, it's a very diverse group, but they call themselves the shining ones, you call the she. And that was really helpful for me. And I would also, and again, invite people, play with poetry, play with rhyme, because it's a magical language. And a long time ago, cultures around the world spoke more poetically with each other. And there is a shaman named Martin Prechtel, and I've read a couple of his books. The first one was Secrets of the Talking Jaguar, which I absolutely loved. I couldn't put it down. And that was about his apprentice with a Mayan shaman up by Lake Atitlan, I think, in Guatemala. And then the second book was called Long Life, Honey in the Heart. That's a Mayan greeting. So if I saw you on the street, I would, you know, come over. Ah, Venice, long life, honey in the heart, dear. Like, so beautiful and poetic.
So poetic, my darling. Oh my gosh, I just love it. So when you're a seer, you're connecting with consciousness, right? Consciousness, I guess. You said there's many different kinds.
Sure. Well, I feel, so as a child, since I was a little girl, I've been clairsentient, which is where you feel, you can sense things. And also claircognizant, which was where you get the knowing. And when I was little, I just called it confirmations. Like, I would know when stuff was going to happen. And I couldn't explain how I knew, but I knew. And so when I'm on the mushroom, obviously you have visuals and... But it's funny because I've seen beautiful things, But when they come, I always sense them, and they are tall and shimmering. They're just shimmering. They're beautiful. And the feeling them, it's almost like we all have this ability. If someone comes up behind you and they're super quiet, you have no idea, but you sense like someone's behind you and you turn around and there they are, right? So I think it's that sense that we all have. And everything has a frequency signature. And so I'm just able to tell, you know, I can tell the difference if an owl is coming through me, which they often do. There's a group of them. Or if it's the sheep or the gnomes. And the gnomes are amazing. They're short and they've got long beards and long fingers and they're kind of hunched like this and they stroke their beard, you know, and they talk really funny. And I just know because they inhabit me completely. Like I could feel how they are. That's been going on for years, years. So, yeah. And it's interesting because I just took Bernhardt's, is it Bernhardt or Bernard?
Magic Castle experience. It was amazing, wasn't it?
What a magical man. And he was fantastic. And I want to share something because he talked about that this is all the imagination. And so I gave a talk a couple days ago for this online conference called Women in Psychedelics. And it was, my talk was titled Mushrooms, the She, and the Other World. And I found this beautiful quote by Caitlin and John Matthews, and they are very esteemed scholars of the Western spiritual tradition and Celtic wisdom. Between the two of them, they've authored like 200 books. Like they're real, and they speak Gaelic, they can translate old texts. They're amazing. And they also, to them, they're not like stuck in their intellect. They know these beings are very real. And they've been doing this, they're in their 70s for probably at least 50 years. Anyway, I quote it, and I'm just going to read this on the imagination because it is so minimized now, it's dismissed. And haven't we all been told, oh, honey, that's just your imagination?
Oh, my gosh, that's what we're brought up with, isn't it? It's just our imagination. Sorry for interrupting.
You know, anyway, but you know, that's like standard, that just sort of dismissal, that mockery, you know, when someone is in touch with these realms these days.
Yes.
And I remember talking to a woman who homeschooled her children many years ago, and she was a deep researcher, and she said, Shona, you have to understand that when, like, school children, by the time they're 7 or 8, their imagination has been taken down so many notches, they're at very low capacity because the system doesn't want that. It doesn't want creative, imaginative people. It wants people working for, you know, going to the universities funded by the sort of big families who then you're going to get out of that university and work for one of the corporations of those big families. You know, like that's...
Yes, it's the whole spectrum of magic, right? And I think the general population really doesn't have a grasp on what magic really is. It's been so distorted by like film and television. One of the things that Bernard said that was so interesting to me, and I think he's nailed it, is that he said that the imagination is an organ of perception. And imagination is very much tied into magic. And you said you have a quote on that, darling?
He's amazing. Oh, my God. People need to check him out. He's quite something. All right. So this is from their book, The Encyclopedia of Celtic Wisdom. And they write, in our own time, where direct sources of inspiration are mocked and marginalized, such a fundamental trust seems misplaced. Yet all artists learn to trust the imagination as the seedbed of inspiration, training it to receive the eternal truth and the deep knowledge of the other world. The Celtic otherworld is a reality which transcends but also intersects the ordinary reality we call everyday life. It is not dislocated from ordinary reality, but continually interrelates with it, feeding it and drawing from it, acting as a deep resource of wisdom. Every culture has its own imaginal realms. Hebrew Kabbalah calls it the world of Bria, the creative realm. Platonism calls it the realm of archetypes. Jungian theory calls it the collective unconscious. The Celtic otherworld is not necessarily analogous to these. However, it remains a place where the essential inspiration of the universe is freely available. The Celtic otherworld was and is accessible through that burning glass of the soul, the imagination. The original sense of the word imagination has become warped into meaning a faculty to dream up illusory things. But the imagination is nothing less than our doorway to the other world. It is the prime faculty of shamanic consciousness through which come the dreams, visions, and ideas which we in turn implement in ordinary reality. We have to learn to trust the information that our meditations give us, trusting our imagination and our dreams, and sifting the answers the other world gives us.
Wow, that's perfect, isn't it? There's several things there. The first is learning to trust the imagination. So one of the weirdest things for me when I was doing my yoga teacher training is that they said to me, breathe your spine, right? And I'm like, how do you breathe your spine? There's no friggin' lungs in your spinal column, right? So it was kind of like a ridiculous idea for me. But then as I did it and as I practiced it, I eventually really was able to breathe my spine. Like the first time it was really weird, but then after doing it for several times, I began to trust my imagination and it actually happened.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, okay, so this is interesting. I haven't thought about this in a long time. I'm just thinking about this. I had an astrology reading probably 10 or 11 years ago by this guy, forget his name now. Anyway, I didn't go to college. What was so funny is I always thought I was kind of a dum-dum. Like I didn't think I was that bright because I didn't do very well in school and which is ridiculous. But anyway, whatever, there you are. I just didn't do well in public school. I didn't test well. And I was in Greenwich, Connecticut, so everyone had their tutors and they all, oh my God, I did so badly on my SATs. I didn't even know what an SAT was. You know, I mean, I had no idea. And so anyway, they were all prepped and then off they went to do their career and be super successful. And then I went into New York City to be an actress, but anyway, or try, and a waitress, mostly a waitress. But in any case, so I missed those 4 years of indoctrination. Not to say there's anything wrong with going to university, but look at what the university has become now. They're Marxist indoctrination camps. But in any case, this astrologist said to me, he said, this was a type of protection for you. That's what he called it. He said, it's to keep your mind free. I never forgot that. I was like, wait, what? Because I was always... I felt like loser, you know, like just ridiculous. But anyway, he's like, no, that was by design. You have to be an independent thinker. And so anyway, so that's interesting. So my imagination, I guess, didn't get, or my ability to kind of go there wasn't corrupted. I would just go there. But also think when you mentioned healing, think of the implications. If people are really encouraged to actually cultivate that, think of all these studies they do, and there's always the placebo, and they just sort of breeze over that, like, oh yes, 12% placebo, and then the drug did this, you know, and it's like, wait a minute, back it up, buddy. What's up with that placebo? You mean to tell me that person, you know, whatever, cured this or whatever through a placebo? How's that possible, right? This, and this is why these... The underlying or the pervasive message in all of these, a number of these poetic incantations that I've received, is about the power of the mind. Like just over and over and over stressing that. And in the book, there's a chapter called Conjuring a Cottage. So I talk about that whole story of how that came to be. And then following that, are all the poetic transmissions that came to me several months in a row up until I got the house, and then a couple more. helping me sort of stay focused because I had to renovate and I started to get nervous, like, oh my God, am I going to run out of money? And they're like, sister, get back on track, you know, with these incredible transmissions. So that's the thing too. This book, it's a magical manual and it's a portal, you know, again, for those who can open themselves to this kind of thing to receive. I'll read one of the transmissions maybe later, but
I just want to interject, though. So if you don't know Shauna's story about her manifestation abilities, they are some of the most remarkable that I have ever heard. So you have to get the book and listen to it. But I was just interviewing Rupert Sheldrake on The Power of the Mind, and he was talking about how he wanted to do a test, like a scientific study to test the observer effect. And the dean at the university said, no, we're not going to do that because you're going to prove that the mind does have power and we don't want to open up that can of worms. So it's kind of crazy. Like scientifically, there's just so much resistance to this. I don't really get why. I think it would be great if we understood more about the powers of the mind.
Yes. Absolutely, absolutely. And there are, as you know, many gatekeepers in the so-called science field. And as someone I knew once said, there's science and then there's paid science. So, you know, the paid science has become a tyranny and a cult. And science is about inquiry and experimentation. And really, really, that sounds really weird, but all right, come on, let's see what you got. Like, God forbid. That happened with Rupert.
Yeah, and he wants to, you know, open science up and kind of put the idea of consciousness into science, and they're just so resistant to it. It's just amazing to me. It's kind of like it's easier to fool somebody than to prove to them that they've been fooled. I just don't get it.
Yeah.
I think it really does come back to control, darling. I think it does. I think it's, you know, it's ultimately about controlling people.
Yeah.
Now, I bet I'm not the only person who says that I get goose pimples when reading your poetry.
It's interesting because when I went on that trip with Freddie Silva all those years ago, probably 9 years ago now, we were sitting, and he takes just 6 people. So it's myself, these 5 people, and Freddie, and we were at the breakfast table. And we're on the Isle of Lewis. It was going to be our first full day together. And we were just all talking. And then someone asked me what I did. And I just said, well, you know, I write and I do poetry, you know. And so then someone said, could you read one of your poems? And I was like, okay. So I had my cell phone. I had to, like, look up one of my poems. And it was one of the 4 messages I received when I was lying in silent darkness with someone who'd flown out to work with me. It was my very first sort of retreat, quote unquote. I didn't even know I was going to end up doing those. She just asked if she could do that. She was a client. And so I received these messages I call messages from the old gods. And so there's 4 of them. And I just read the first one. They're short. And you could have heard a pin drop. And I was like, oh my God. And then this person said, do you have another one? Could you read another one? You know, so that's when, and then I would have retreat clients come, and sometimes I would share the channeled poetry, and they would be so moved. So then I started to realize this is, so in my acknowledgments, I thank these beautiful people who've come and been my clients, who've sat at my kitchen table, and, you know, their response was so touching. And that also sort of inspired me, like, no, take this out. And that's also what. And so I've had this 12-year apprenticeship to the mushrooms, and I'm in my 9th year of doing retreats. So I'm being initiated, like, initiations keep going, right? And I'm in another one. So I had the piece about getting the house in Vermont, and that was, you know, the big story. That conjuring was incredible. And I thought it was my forever home. Ha ha, no. It was there for 3 years, then it was time to leave. So it was my COVID cocoon during all the cray-cray. I was all tucked away. And so that now here I am in Northern Virginia, and my retreats have slowed down considerably. And they've said, daughter, it's time to now take yourself out. Oh, and that's the other thing. I took myself off all the social media, stopped writing my newsletter in 2020. So I've been under the radar, underground, quiet for like 4 years. And they're like, you have to, you know, bring this book out, do more teaching. It's time. And I've been so spoiled because the majority of my clients, like 90, 95% is word of mouth. Now, all of a sudden I realize, oh shit, I got to like get out there. And so it's scary also, cause it's not altogether comfortable for me. I mean, I love this kind of talking. This is so fun, but you know, I mean, people can be really awful. So not everyone, obviously.
It's just, you know, you get one or two randos that just come out of the woodwork to say something bad. Like, why do you need to say something bad? If you don't like the video, just move on.
I know who does that. Like, why?
I want to go back for a second. When you commune with these beings, can you actually ask them questions?
Yes. Oh, yes, yes. Especially when I'm on the mushroom. And then it comes through poetically, right? So, yeah. In fact, I read you that transmission. I call it the real estate. And actually, it ends my book. Because I was asking them, or, you know, I was in this space of like, oh my God, like this, we're in such a mess. Like we're in so much trouble. And then that beautiful message came through in poetry. And so, yeah, that's how they speak. And then I work a lot with cards. I've had a couple of, I don't use tarot. I mean, I do use tarot. I like tarot, but I've been working with Lenormand cards. And I've had a couple of psychics say, you know, you could be working with cards, Shona. And I just recently, like in the last few months, started incorporating them into just like my counseling sessions. And they're just so astute, but I'll do that for myself as well. Like I'm looking over here because I did a spread for myself. I asked a question and it's absolutely bang on. It's like exactly, it's like, I know.
It's like, that's not the answer I wanted. I want a better answer. Give me a better answer.
I remember Brew, my lay teacher, talking about the deep psyche. He would say the deep psyche can't tell the difference between what's imagined and what's actually real. So this is why the imagination is so, so important to work with. So, you know, if you're visioning, it's really, and repetition. And so the more you do that, you're making this impression on the deep psyche. So that's really what I was doing when I conjured that cottage, if you will. But I also, there's a wisdom piece here too, because it's not like, okay, so it's been slow and then I start to fret like, oh no, what's going, you know? But I also realized, no, this is training. This is part of my training. In other words, you know, there are times when it feels like, oh no, is my magic not working anymore? And it's like, pay attention to the cycles as we were talking about. There's cycles. There's, you know, it's up, it's down. The I Ching talks about this. There's increase and then there's decrease, right? And so, you are, you know, prepared. That's wisdom. But also to understand, a great lesson for me is at the end of the day, I don't have the last word. You know, like, I'm co-creating, but then there's got to be that humility to understand that there is a larger force, whatever you want to call it, but there is a larger force at work, and it's way wiser and smarter than any of us, like, you know, knows way more than we do. We're the actors. We, you know, we don't have the next act, the script for the next act, you know, but something else does. And so sometimes, no matter how astute your magic is, your, you know, ability to work with all the faculties that we have. Remind me to talk about the three cauldrons. It doesn't matter. It's not, well, it's also about timing. You know, timing's a huge, huge piece. And sometimes, actually, you know what? That's actually not such a good thing because there's something else even better that's coming. So it's really, it's a dance, I think. I think working magically is a dance.
That's such a beautiful metaphor, darling. And honestly, I didn't even know about the cauldron before I read your book. So tell us about the cauldron. Cauldron is really, really powerful symbolism.
Yeah, the poets worked with a cauldron system. It was the three cauldrons. Well, there's a poem that was, I think, translated in the 12th century, and it's been titled The Cauldron of Poesy and said to be written by Amergin, who's like a Taliesin. So Taliesin and Amergin are these just incredible sage poets. The chief, like when you were at the highest aspect of your art as a seer poet, you were called an olam or olav. And so olam means doctor of poetry. It was also a word given to someone in law who's you know, very, very accomplished in law. So they were called the olam. But in any case, so there's the three cauldrons. And the first cauldron is the cauldron of incubation or warming, and it's located in the dantian, so that's three finger widths below your belly. And that said, if you think of the pelvis, it's like a cauldron. And so that cauldron is upright. And so we're born with that cauldron upright, and through that cauldron, you know, flows in kind of what we need for our life force and the brain power and just sort of everything we need. And so that would be kind of that, those first few years also of the foundational training of the poets, where, you know, again, they were taught, you know, how to form this poetry and grammar and just, oh my God, I can't even imagine. I it's actually heartbreaking, you know, to think, oh my God.
It's like, oh, I wish I could be there. I know, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, the ones who trained, you had to come from a family, a lineage of poets. That said, if you weren't of that class, but you showed that, you know, you had a superb memory and retention and a way with words, then you could train, and then it would take a generation or two, and then the family would be recognized. So that was cool. But anyway, then the second cauldron is in the heart center, and that is the cauldron of motion or the cauldron of vocation. And so that is, so these poets, and so it's on its side, and it was said that it would be turned upright through joy or sorrow. So in other words, these poets were, they were cool with being bummed out. Like they were fine with sorrow, anger, lust, yearning, whatever it was, because then they would take those emotions and essentially stew. Like, and they, their training, they thought of when they were in darkness, they were in, the cauldron was the womb of Brigid, because she's the patroness of the poets. So they were just stewing in that cauldron until, you know, the poetry came forth, just stirring beautiful, epic work of poetry as a result of all that emotion. And then the third cauldron is up here in the third eye center, known also as the third pillar or the bridge to heaven, right? As we know, the pineal. And that is the cauldron of wisdom or the cauldron of knowledge. And so I think it's very interesting that it was in those last few years of their training where they were then taught the magical arts. And that was prophecy and divination, psychometry. So that was... psychometry was something, it was called Dichetel Dohenev, Henev, with a V, Dichetel Dohenev. And so it's the whorls of the fingers. You would touch something and you would get a full download. You'd get all the information. Now they also had staffs, and they could use their staff and touch something with the staff, and they would have all the information they would need. And if two poets met, they would touch staffs, and the staff would tell them everything they needed to know about the other poet. And so, yeah. I mean, imagine that level of training. Incredible. And so it was in those later years that they were taught those arts. And also augury, which is the reading of the flights of birds and divining through that. And they also were taught the healing arts. Now, they were taught something called the three illuminations. So Dichetel Dohenev was the third illumination. The first one was the one I mentioned, Imbas Ferozna. And so Imbas, you're seeking knowledge and you're going into this high trance state to find it. And what they would do, and this was written about in Cormac's glossary in, I think, the 12th century, where, and Cormac didn't get the training, but he was just reporting on kind of what they would do. They would eat the flesh of a red pig, cat, or dog, which may well have been a metaphor for the Amanita muscaria, the red mushroom with the white dots on it, right? So who knows? Who knows? But they would chew on it, and then they would put that on the flagstone behind the door of their house of darkness. And they would do an invocation to the spirits and then sing to call the spirit in and ask them to please give them the answer to whatever the question was. And these people were very high rank. They were the same rank as the king. And they couldn't be, they were above the law. So they would be asked to come up with who should be the next king, like a big deal. And then they would go into that darkness, that incubation, for anywhere between 3 and 9 days. And other Phila poets would watch over them, which is also very possible because with Amanita muscaria, and I've never worked with it, it's very different than psilocybin, but you're very sensitive to light. Kind of need to be in darkness. Yeah, yeah. So that was Imbas Frosna, and then they would come, you know, they'd divine, they would come out with the answer. And then the second one was Ten Lagda. And that was, it means chewing on the pith of the poem, like the pith of a fruit. And so it would be this like fractalized poem, and they, it would be a kind of invocation, and Amergin used that when they were on their ships about to land on the land of Ireland, you know, and so anyway, and so they would sort of divine in that way. It was really, really just beautiful and powerful. I mean, their training's gorgeous. And then there's a beautiful book, Venice, called, oh my God, I just lost it. What is it called? It's by Daniel Corkery, The Secret Country. And it is about the poets of Munster, Ireland, in the 1617 and early 1800s. And it goes into the horrific genocide that was put on the Irish. There was no famine. It was just all the food was leaving Ireland and going to Great Britain. And also it was very anti-Catholic, and it was horrendous. And then that's when you had the hedge schools, because they were not allowed to learn. So these big, big hedges, and by the way, a number of these priests, you have to remember, I mean, they were Irish boys. So they were very sympathetic, and that many of them were poets themselves. But you would have a poet instructor, and granted, it was very different from pre-Norman Ireland in terms of the training of the seer poets, but still, it was impressive. But they'd have to like crawl under the hedges, you know, meet the instructor in secret, because if they were caught, the instructor would be hung. I mean, they just killed them. Oh, it was unbelievable. And but then they were taught, my God, these people could speak Greek and Latin and these different languages, including their Gaelic language. And then their poems, their poetry was absolutely gorgeous. And they were just poor as church mice. And men, anyway, whatever. It's a beautiful book. I highly, highly recommend it. I put one little quote in there about just how brokenhearted these poets would be by the end of their training, because they would train. It started at Samhain, like I said, and they would go into these houses of darkness. There would be an instructor, a main poet, and they'd be given their instructions just at before daylight, and then in they go in the darkness all day long, and they would put their plaids around their head, and they'd have a big rock on their belly, so some thought that they don't fall asleep, but also it's surmised that it was also to, so that they could learn to kind of breathe properly and use the breath. And then they would have that training until the call of the first cuckoo in March. And then they were just bereft, because it was like this wonderful kind of brotherhood for them.
It sounds amazing, darling. Ireland is crazy, right? It's so interesting. There's a lot going on there. Is it more of an Irish tradition than Scottish?
Oh, it's in Scotland as well. In fact, in the 1600s, there was a writer, Martin Martin. He's the one who wrote about the poets of Scotland, the seer poets of Scotland, and what their training involved in the House of Darkness and everything. So, you know, and in Wales and through Great Britain, you know, they had their bards. But Ireland retained a lot of it, I think, because it's an island. I would say it's retained a lot of that magic. And I think it's very telling that Britain came down so hard on the Irish. I mean, they really tried to genocide them. Over 1.5 million people died. It was said that there were people who were so starved that they're walking near a body of water, and if the wind came, it would just blow them into the water. They were just skin and bone, and then they drown. I mean, just absolutely heartbreaking and deplorable and disgusting. Makes me furious. And I think at the end of the day, I think it was professional jealousy. Is that an expression? You know, because think of how these people were first just such artists. I mean, Smithcraft. You need a spear, you need a dagger. That thing could have been in the Smithsonian. It was so beautiful, the handle, everything, the craftsmanship, right? It was like a samurai sword. And just like everything they did, their art, and then their the way they spoke and the poetry. And still, I mean, my God, these beautiful Irish poets and you know, and Scottish, whatever. I have such appreciation for that. There's a wonderful man I interviewed for my little podcast. His name is Sean Padraig O'Donohue, and he's a poet, and he's an herbalist and a teacher, and he's just, what a beautiful soul. He's also autistic, and he's really special, beautiful person. And his poetry is gorgeous. I have a little bit of that in the book as well.
Now, darling, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I do want to ask you this question about what Terence said about how poetry can save the world. Do you have an idea of what mechanism that might be?
Well, you know, Caitlin and John spoke about this also in the Encyclopedia of Celtic Wisdom, and they talked about the word enchantment and how that word also, like imagination, has kind of gone down the tubes. But they said that this was a tradition where you had these sort of sacred people like the seer poets or the, you know, the other, the bards. There's a difference. The phila, there were the bards, and the bards had the lyre they played, and but they didn't have the level of training that the phila did. But in any case, these people would enchant. They would chant into being the magical speech of the other world. And so poetry, you know, when you are, for most of us, if you're going to write a poem, you have to kind of shift your state of consciousness. It's not the same as just writing a letter or writing an article. It's totally different. It's and we seem to just naturally know that. Or if you're going to listen to someone or read a poem, poetry stirs the heart and the soul and the mind. It does something. It casts a spell. It enchants. And in a very beautiful way, okay, I will say, with the phila, there were three types of poetry. There was white poetry, and that's poetry of praise, and they were often kind of hired, in a sense, by like a big important family or a king or whatever, and they would write these poems of praise for the leader or the family itself. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Then there was speckled poetry, and speckled poetry was a warning. So if you're skating on thin ice with a poet because you're not going to pay him for his poem, well, they're going to give you a warning. And then there was black poetry, and that was satire. And so that was brutal, brutal, because that would take a person of power and influence down, because no one would be able to look at that person with a straight face again. And of course, these guys are absolute wordsmiths, right? So there's no, oh my God, so satire, no one wanted to be satirized. And Thomas Sheridan talks about this. And he talks about even how like memes are kind of the satire of modern day. And I love memes, and so does he. He does some great memes. But anyway, so, and there were some poems who abused their position, because they would travel like with their entourage. And if they came to your big land estate, you'd have to put them up for however long and feed everybody. And but there were some poets who would just fully take advantage. You know, there's always a few duds, right? Just so anyway, but in any case, so poetry, it stirs the soul, and it can also
But actually, that's really key, isn't it, darling? Like, again, magic is not something that people think it is. It's kind of different. But there's nothing more powerful than eviscerating somebody in that way, right? If you make fun of them, because all of a sudden the population starts to laugh at them and they lose their power. I mean, that's really magic.
Well, think of the cancel culture.
It's the same thing, right? It's utilizing a shift in consciousness about literally stripping somebody of their influence, their power, their charisma. So yeah.
I mean, it's the power of the word. Words are powerful. My God. I mean, the Bible starts out, in the beginning was the word, and the word was God. Like, that's like the first deal. Is the word was spoken. And then in the Vedas speak of Nada Brahma, the sound of God. Words are powerful. So we are a living wand. I'm telling you, we are a living wand. And the mushroom spirit said to me once, there's a user's manual for this mind-body complex you find yourself in. You've not been given it, they said, but some of you are going to figure it out. And so I think also, just because I'm an Aries and my motto is you're not the boss of me. And so it's like, what are they not teaching us? What do they not want us to look at? Law, first of all. The imagination. Boy, if they just diminished that, minimized that, marginalized and mocked. And this kind of magical exploration, you know, they've Harry Pottered it.
Yeah, honestly, I was talking to somebody about that the other day, about the Harry Potter woman. I can't remember her name, right? Yeah, but we know who she is. But like, is she a gift? Is she actually a gift, or is she a curse? Because on one hand, she's opening the door to magic, and on the other hand, she's kind of distorting what magic is. So I don't know. Like, I don't know if it's a matter of octaves, if she's doing more helping or harming. It's kind of an interesting question. And, you know, we are in this battle between good and evil, right? So, you know, is it good or is it a red herring?
Yeah. It's a joke, a lot of it. And it's what they did to the fairy as well, if you will. So in the 1600s, it was these poets and these images, these little sprites, you know, the Victorians just loved the little mushrooms with the fairies and the elves. And they just diminished them down to these little enchanters or spellcasters, you know. Meanwhile, the Shi are comprised of the Tuatha De Danann. And again, and you know, by the way, I'm not saying, oh, they're all wonderful, because they're not, because there's some to be avoided. I mean, the spirit world is as above, so below, right? So there's ones you just stay away from if you're smart. And then others that are, you know, quite sympathetic to mortal men and women. But in any case, you know, they're tall, shimmering beings, and they were gods and goddesses. And the Irish speak of the Natri Nom, which is the sacred three, the gods, ancestors, and land spirits. So, but now fairy, you say that word to just a regular person, and they just like, they roll their eyes, you know, and, or an academic. Oh my God. Although that said, there are, you know, there are people in academia. In fact, is this her book? Oh gosh, no, that's on the Boston Irish. Never mind, different book. What is her name? Anyway, she's an academic and she's written some beautiful books on the Shi, and I don't see it here. Or anyway, whatever. I have so many books you don't even want to see.
Yes, there are some great books on it, you know, that academics are writing, that's true. But I kind of love Thomas Sheridan's approach about fairies, that you don't want to mess with them because they're not what you think. They can mess you up, those fairies, you know what I mean? It's not all.
Well, it's like, this is no joke. This is, you know, this is no joke. These beings are real, and or however you want to think of them, frequencies, energetics, whatever. But it's a respect and a regard also for the land and the spirits of the land. And there are certain areas where you feel like, ah, it just feels really good here. And then others where you're like, ooh, I'm not sure about this. Like, yeah, leave, you know.
Yes, absolutely. But, oh, look at that gorgeous cat looking right into the camera. Poppy's a movie star. Oh, so, darling, my last question for you is, have you ever run into any of those creatures being nasty? Like, are there nasty ones out there? And I don't mean like the Red Queen. I mean like really, really nasty creatures.
Oh yes. In my first year of monthly mushroom journeys, midway through, it was wintertime. I was with my medicine friend, and we were deep in the medicine. I wrote about this in Love and Spirit Medicine, my book that chronicles that first year of mushroom journeys. But he, to my perception, turned into this dark pan, like the scariest, I couldn't even believe. And then he said to me, "You have a demon in you." Like, so something was going on, and I called it a succubus or a succubi. Like, that's kind of what it felt like. And I also felt like this was sport for it. And it was this huge distortionary energy, and it was awful. It was absolutely awful. And when I got out of that journey, I was working with these grandmas at the time, and these spirit grandmas, and they said to me, "Daughter, if you're going to be in mediumship, you need to recognize that frequency and avoid it." So, like, I got a taste of it.
When you went into the Magic Castle, what are your armaments like?
My armaments in that room were the weapons. It's interesting. I saw a big scythe, and it was beautiful, and a couple of axes, and then I saw a number of daggers that were in a glass case, but they were like museum pieces. They were gorgeous.
I had bupkis, darling. I'm going to have to get a long list of things to get into my castle to protect myself. You know, I know magically I'm basically defenseless.
Yeah. Do you want me to read
Yes,
just
please.
one of
You
the
say before we
missions?
go, read us one, darling.
I read this for the talk I gave the other day. And this is, so it's an excerpt from the book. Sorry, I have to clear my throat here. Let me just find this. Okay. So yeah, this was wintertime. I was in my bed. When I go in alone in silent darkness. I don't want any soundtracks. I don't want any music or chanting, nothing. I want to go into the silence because I find also we're so overstimulated. But I was, when I first started the mushroom, my friend and I were following Terence McKenna's directive, which he was a bard, and he would say 5 dry grams lying down in silent darkness. So that's what I've done ever since. So this is what came through. And by the way, then they tease me. I don't have it, but they tease me about this is what you're using essentially in your hand, and it's my digital recorder, because I would always, use that to, I can't remember this possibly. So they said, "In a safe place once again, dancing on the earthly plane, daughter dear, you do complain, thinking your pursuits in vain. No, dear, feel us in your heart, opening precious door to start what you might call a new mindset, one that you won't soon forget. Yes, it's been forgotten here, and we are resurrecting seers, eyes to see and ears to hear, and not to fall into old fears. Changing history, you could say, calling now a higher play, pausing now this vulgar thing. Where on earth is the gold ring? This you hold in your hand now? This you call the sacred cow? We laugh at such nonsense there. And still, we tell you, be aware. The true intelligence is found beneath you in the holy ground, the earth a metaphor for you. And so do not be so confused. Machines can do a lot, it's true, but don't think they can replace you. Though certain folk among you think that they are on the very brink of time when their inventions birth synthetic forms upon the earth. It is time to break their spell. This place has become a hell. All the needless suffering, all the good earthly beings deserve better. That is so. Got that, dear daughter who knows? Take that to your listeners there. help them to become aware, as you did playing with AI, an eye that watches you, and with cunning it does brew an ugly cauldron in its wake. That's a spell you all must break. As your kitty cleans his fur, so must you, dear, please transfer into the living world of beauty. Take that as your sacred duty. Vast mysterium of light, many prisms, quite the sight. There is much you've not been told, yet you hold it ancient old in your living body there, yet sadly most are unaware. We do not seek to possess, for if we did, 'twould be a mess. We simply offer our good counsel. Take it all, or just an ounce will satisfy. Yes, just a drop. In your mind, we're like a mop that can absorb the detritus and sweep aside nevertheless, and help you birth, an overused word, but do not think that it's absurd. We're opening doors that once were shadowed, opening the ground that's hallowed, that's been hidden, well cared for. Time to open up that door. It will take more than an hour for our folk to gently scour all the thoughts that plague your mind. We will clean this temple fine, helping you to see divine, to recognize your own design. The outside world, it hurts to watch that good place, to see it caught and snared in what's a spider's web. But we say time does flow and ebb, and what might seem a dark earth spell will meet its end, all will be well. This a promise of a kind that you don't easily find, but feel it, daughter. Oh, such peace to be felt by all, so sweet. Peace of mind is what they call it. This our hope that will befall it. Peace of mind, not war and battle, true peace. And for those, the cattle, good shepherds will guide them well and ably lead them out of hell. The masses of your people there have got themselves in quite a snare. The sooner they become aware, the sooner they can climb the stairs that lead them to a new affair. So while they've poisoned outer plains, beneath the ground we've rearranged, and we continue stirring soil, this we think's a worthy toil. And when good soil is stirred on earth, it will produce a stirring birth. You wishing peace in time of war, we will say that outworn whore will be laid to rest here soon. We declare on this full moon our declaration we do speak. We don't yell and shout and shriek, no, with the voice of woman here, we say this birth is not to fear. Opening doors of good hearts wise, clearing dust out of their eyes, attic windows opening, bringing sunshine, we're hoping, lighting up the darkest places, where one sees that friendly faces live there too. We hold your hand, good folk from a distant land. Rescue mission, if you will. We will stay with you until your temple's cleaned, your soil is fertile. We'll unlock the serpent's girdle so you all can once more breathe. And in your minds you will conceive a place of beauty, we repeat. But it's important that you greet the face of beauty with respect. When you do, you will connect. But this connection, this one's true. It's one that lives inside of you. A mystery of prisms vast, you will raise this vessel's mast with what we call integrity. You don't believe it, but you see, your heart's in the right place, we say. Mistakes will happen anyway, and so you've wizened up yourself, making proud good fae and elf. It's curious how we're ignored, and now Earth's children, they get bored, if not ensnared in their device, for they are caught like wretched mice. But we will not give up on you, good children of the earth, so few among your folk with eyes that see, and yet more waking presently. Take good care of precious soil, good daughter who always toils, your body's tired, precious one, time to have a little fun. Ah, dear, please do laugh with us. We don't cause injurious effects upon you that we see. Your good soil, no injury. But we'd say it needs energy. So as you gas up your white car, We will give you in this hour a good injection, energy, so your vessel will be free, resonating with the Fae. This station is far away. Holding you in poetry, opening third eye to see you'll have control of the wheel. Those who torment, they will heal. For it's a game of words they play, but we can best that, we the Fae. In whatever language used, we can come in and infuse a kind of oil change for your car, helping you navigate the hour. Daughter, we declare this night that you with your second sight will see ahead of what will come, and you'll be ready for that one. For your life's changing, get thee ready. Get that good ship strong and steady. You'll be crossing many channels as you lie there in your flannels. Get the rest your body needs, then go outside and plant your seeds.
Oh my gosh, darling. You know what Bernard said is that you know it's real when you get a visceral reaction, and I just got goosebumps. And darling, that's what you're doing. You're resurrecting Sears. I mean, look, tell them about this cauldron thing. That's part of what you're doing in the cauldron thing, right? I mean, you're helping people to re-remember their talents, right?
Yes. Yeah, so it's called the Three Cauldrons of Poetry. It's not necessarily so you can write poetry at the end, but it goes into how to cultivate these cauldrons with the understanding that this is not a one and done. This is not like, oh, take this course and your cauldrons will be activated and they'll be all turned upright. No, of course not. But let's talk about how to cultivate this. And also let's talk about the training of the seer poets, because we can implement that. We can do our version of that. And I'll be talking a lot about Bridget as well. We'll be connecting with her and with the she, and also going into the magical training of the seer poets as well. So it goes for 12 weeks. It's once a week. And then they get one 30-minute session with me. So they'll figure out, you know, when they're going to do that. And it starts on the 13th of May. So it'll be every Monday for.
So it's like resurrecting your inner seer. I mean, that just really struck me, darling. I mean, you're walking the walk. You're planting seeds. You're doing what needs to be done. You're planting your seeds.
Yeah, I'm planting seeds. Yes, I love how that, the end of that, get the rest you need, which is actually what this past like year has been. I've been getting the rest I need, then go outside and plant your seeds.
Yeah, that's amazing, darling. Look, I don't even know. Wow. It's amazing how they're talking about modern stuff like AI going on in the world. That's crazy.
Yes. I think they're affected by it because this is frequency and these are damaging frequencies. So everything feels that it's frequency. And so they're running these distortion fields of distorted frequencies. And it's an overlay. Just like this system is a commercial system and it's an overlay on the living system of nature and mankind.
Chance calls it the digital doppelganger, like they're creating this whole digital overlay, like a fake reality.
Okay, so I was going to say, when you talked about AI, and I've never been on the ChatGPT, but I've heard all about this. And I would say at the end, we've talked about this. I remember you sent me your bio. I remember reading it. I was like,
that doesn't sound like Venice.
It doesn't sound like you at all. And so there's a quality missing in this AI written stuff.
There's soul missing, darling. I think that's the point. Like I said, we put YouTubes on because Chance can't fall asleep without something going on. And so, you know, the YouTube angels wake me up when I need to hear something, which is really, really cool. Like Terrence McKenna thing that I was telling you about. But the downside is these, you know, electronic voices. I think I've become allergic to them. And, you know, in no time, the internet is going to be just dead.
Makes me think of that rap song, You Can't Touch This.
Can't touch it. That's right, darling. You're onto it.
They can't touch that. And that's why I love that piece that I call the real estate. In fact, I'll quickly say, so you know this, because I went into the Mushroom Realms on New Year's Day. I usually do, because my girls are gone. I'm all alone. Got the house to myself. And in I go on that first day. And I thought, because the book was done, but I thought, let me just see, you know, if more poetry comes through. I never assume, because I'm always so humbled when it comes to, I'm like, oh my God. But I'm not like, oh yeah, I can go in. Yeah, watch that. It doesn't work that way at all. But anyway, I went in and I was with like the mother queen. She was so beautiful. And I have thought about that journey every day. It was a very, very profound experience for me. But she said, the book is done. She said, there will be no poetry today. You know, like the book is done. And then it was an extraordinary journey. And I mean, I have had poetry every single mushroom journey for a lot of years. And I understood that. And anyway, it was a very important experience. So I knew, okay, that last transmission, the real estate, that ends the book. You know, with a punctuation mark, like, look, it doesn't matter how great their inventions are and how flashy and all their might, they can't enter this place, the place of the ancient mentors. They don't have access. They don't get to go in. Period, the end. And it's not like, oh, you know, good and evil and oh, whatever, that's bullshit and what, you know, no. There's frequency. This is about frequency. And so that is a certain frequency. And then there is, you know, this other frequency over here. And I know this from Ida Mushroom Journey a few years back. And I was in a place of just difficulty and challenge. And so in I go into the mushroom space. And at one point I came to this exquisite temple and there were all these women in this temple and they were all in white. They were so beautiful. And I was at the threshold and one of the ladies came and she said, daughter, you cannot enter, dear. You know, she said, you're still in your guilt and your whatever, you know. So it was like, I understood right away what she meant. This is a frequency. And I'm not resonating at that frequency where I was able to cross that threshold. You know, she wasn't, you know, there was no.
Yeah, no, he was saying, I mean, we've been playing with this idea of like egregore, right? So egregore is this big kind of psychic weather thing that affects our consciousness. And I've been thinking about the mechanism on how does it actually do that. And the only thing I can think of is resonance, right? That it resonates at a frequency and we kind of move to adapt to that. So, you know, it's a big energetic effect on our consciousness with resonance, resonating a frequency that we're not aware of.
Mm-hmm. Of course. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And these screens are very addictive for people.
Well, that's part of the AI, right? The algorithm. They know how to get us addicted to things more than, they know us better than we know ourselves, which is crazy. So they know how to keep us addicted to these screens. It's like such a deep rabbit hole, right? And it's something that I'm very interested in, but like there's so much to go into.
Yeah.
And back to Bernard for a second, he's a remote viewer, right? So he and all of his team have done this remote viewing on the future and they've seen that the future is incredibly amazing and it's not that far away, right? It's just at a hand's reach, he said. And I was incredulous. Like I was absolutely incredulous. I mean, I see the friggin' condition of things today. I found it very, very hard to believe. But you're saying the same thing, darling.
They are. They're also, you know, they're giving warnings too. I mean, these messages are, some of them are. Yeah. Yes, yes, absolutely. It's cyclical. I mean, at the end of the day, again, just look to nature, you know? And so we're in the circling the toilet phase right now of nature as a, you know, around the world. I mean, the whole world is just down the tubes. And so, and it's going to continue until it's run its course. And then hopefully, and I think this is happening, there are people who are just inspired, certainly to learn law, you know, because my people perish for lack of knowledge. And so it's very actually frustrating for me to see what's playing out. And here in this country, they've done this in Denmark as well, all over. They're after the farmers, and they're making this law and this law, and then hate speech laws and everything. And so I will just say for the record, that I've been studying something called equity law for 2.5 years now. It's been the most profound study in my study of law to date. It's not the woke equity that's out there. This is very, very old form of law. And it's in the Constitution, Article 3, Section 2, Clause 1. It's in the first sentence there, if anyone wants to look. It's recognized as a law form. But in any case, in order for a law to be a law in this country, it must be promulgated, meaning we have statutes. We have like 60 million statutes, by the way. That's tyranny. But for something to be actually a law, it has to be put into the Federal Registry. And the Federal Registry is what that does is that gives notice to the public. Hey, everybody, this is a law. So the majority of statutes are not. And all these stupid tyranny laws that they're putting forth one after another after another, none of them are being put in the Federal Register, which means they have no force and effect unless you consent or comply. Now you've contracted. And so it's met, you bet it is. Yeah. I mean, Mark Passio gets into all of that so eloquently, you know, with all his natural law. I've listened to all of that years ago. In fact, I'd love to do a refresher.
He's really awesome. I mean, I love him. He's just so incredibly direct. I think people can't handle his directness. It's like they can't handle the truth. But like he's onto it, right? And I'm very grateful for the education that he's given me. But like these mandates, you know, when these mandates came out, they're like, they're not laws. That's magic.
Well, and then what they're doing, though, what they were doing was through the, you know, wearing the face diaper and stuff, they were endeavoring to create custom. And a maxim of law says custom makes the law. So like when you go to court and someone says all rise when the judge walks in, that's custom. And that's kind of the law of the court.
Sneaky. They're sneaky. They know.
Of course. Well, and they've made darn sure that we are completely ignorant of this. And they even took civics out of school decades ago. So, and then, you know, what the kids are learning is obviously what the system wants them to learn and nothing more.
Yeah. The education we get is like how to be a good Amazon employee. Like I think in Seattle, they even have Facebook school, right? So it's like just insane. You learn how to be a good Facebook operator. I just don't know, darling.
It's a mockery. Anyway, it's a mockery of our, we have good minds, you know. I mean, this is a gift from the creative force of this realm that we come in with a mind and it just gets hacked so fast. Because that's how you control people is through the mind, which is again why the beings, when my first 2-3 years of mushrooms, get your mind right, dear, it's a mess in there. And then once I kind of cleared up a lot of the detritus, then they started teaching me how to use it.
Yeah, look, I'm kind of interested in using the magic castle to get my mind right, right? I think it's going to be a really, really good tool for me to go in and do some of that, get your mind right business going on.
He mentioned Aidan Wachter, W-A-C-H-T-E-R, Weaving Fate.
Yes, yes. Have you read that?
Yes, I read it. And I actually have my book upstairs. So yeah, it's like a journal, but you're writing about it as if it happened. So again, all these sort of layers of working with the imagination Because everything is frequency. And so you're creating a frequency field. And then at some point, the greater field will respond. And there is a reason why when they do their dark, pathetic rituals at like Giant Stadium and halftime and the Olympics, and those are all sick rituals. And they want everybody focused on that because our attention feeds it. It feeds whatever their purpose of that particular ritual, right? So that goes to show you how important our intention and attention and energy and focus is. And so they have created reality for us. And so this piece with Bernhard, it's like, no. Start creating your own reality in terms of, now, I don't mean that... But you know, what I see, it's like, are we in the Bardos? You know, you go down the hallway of the 40 demons, you know, and so hopefully you're not going to get sucked back in by one of the demons with anything unresolved, hopefully get to the end of it. But it's like, they've got us in this kind of Bardos now, where everyone's just sucked into this shite, instead of realizing Kingdom of Heaven is within. It's all in here. And if we were all focusing on something together of, you know, beauty and potency.
Well, that's what the whole mythomagic is about. It's about story, right? We can all get in and create a new story about the future and then help work towards creating that future. And so the Magic Castle, in a way, is a way to actually start that process.
Yes, because one of their weapons against us is demoralization, because this is a psychological war that we're in. Why are they using psychological warfare? Because once you demoralize people, you've got them. And so, yeah, it's like, break that spell. That's why it's so important for people to study propaganda, mind control, read Edward Bernays, read Rules for Radicals, read Gustav Le Bon, The Psychology of Crowds, that'll blow your mind. Read John Taylor Gatto and listen to his lectures on YouTube that he gave. He's dead now. That man's amazing. And he was so well-read and so studied. And he explains all about the Prussian school system and why it was designed. And it was designed to get compliant people who can't think for themselves. And then the bell ringing 6-7 times a day, which we all grew up with in school, which is disgusting, that makes it very difficult to kind of connect dots, because whatever that kid is doing, bell rings, thought is interrupted, grab your stuff, go next class. And Gatto talked about, and I wish, I'm ashamed to say, I don't remember the name of the poet, but it was this famous poet. And he said, to understand how insane that is to interrupt the mind, especially these developing minds. He said, this certain poet was writing this just work of art, and there was a knock on the door and he lost it. So, you know, and ultimately school system was brought here because these, I hate to call them elites, but these like just ridiculously wealthy, you know, families, whatever, industrialists, they didn't want any more competition from these very clever people of all manner of races. They didn't want that. So, all right, let's just get them in a single solitary, you know, education system. The state will provide it. We'll come up with a curriculum.
Look, Gatto was amazing. He was one of my earlier influences, right? And another one is Charlotte Isabert. She was amazing, too, in terms of the whole education system. And that's the thing, you know? It's like it's been designed, early onset, designed to mess us up. Even the whole idea of kindergarten, where they grab us at an age where we're most malleable, right?
And they've extended childhood.
I was going to say, like, 14 was a grown-up man back then. You know what I mean? And you're getting married and having babies in your own farm kind of thing. Yeah, yeah.
But it does help to understand that, because then when you can understand what's being done to you, it's like all of a sudden you can see the spell.
And that's it. You don't even realize that it's magic. You don't even realize that magic's being done to you. And, you know, that's what I'm trying to do, really, is to show people that there is magic and it is being done to you, even if you don't see it.
You are doing a superb job, really. You're doing an absolutely superb job. I mean, you are the person for the job, really, Venice. Like, you're doing that so beautifully. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, thank you, darling. I'm trying. It's just really hard, you know, if people haven't had any experiences like the experience that you have had with the mushrooms, you know, if you haven't tasted that other world, then it's really hard for you to come to grips with magic, right? And so, you know, entheogens is one way, you know, yogic breath work is another way, and tantric sex is another way, but those are kind of extreme ways. And so what I kind of love about this castle thing is that it's a great first step for people that don't want to get into crazy sex or crazy drugs, or not crazy drugs, but, you know, mushrooms or those kinds of things. It's a really good first step for people. It's like a gateway.
Right. Well, I think it is and will be, and consistency is key with any of this, right? It's you've got to be consistent, because the more you do it, it's like doing a new trail through the forest. And the more you do it, it gets easier and easier and easier.
Yeah, it's like anything, right? Like the first time you go in, it's like, oh, this is all very new and crazy. But like the 10th time, you're going to be really, really good at it, right? And so it's a great introductory and a great way to practice. And that's kind of when the penny drops, you know, when you get something unexpected.
We are a living portal. This is living intelligence as opposed to artificial intelligence.
Well, my dear, I'm going to have to leave you on those wise words. Thank you so much for talking to me. I always enjoy talking to you, darling, and it was just amazing. It's like, instead of just us now, the whole world gets to hear our conversation, and you're brilliant and you're beautiful. I'm sharing her this time. So thank you so much. Show them the book again and tell them where your website is if they want to come and learn about cauldrons.
Okay, so my website is my name down here, shonahome.com. And I encourage people to order the book from my publisher, which is logosophiabooks.com. You'll see this book on my website.
And I'll also put those links down below. So thank you so much, darling. I love you.
Thank you so much, Venice. This was awesome.
Hello, lovelies. I am so excited to announce the release of our new film called Heka. Heka looks at the magic of ancient Egypt and how that pertains to the story of ancient Egypt, and fills in a whole new perspective that we have been missing collectively for hundreds of years. It features Gordon White, Chance Gardner, Joseph Patrick Farrell, Lon Milo Duquette, Tobias Churton, Graham Hancock, of course, the fabulous John Anthony West, Rupert Sheldrake, Stephen Skinner, Thomas Sheridan, Peter Mark Adams, Thomas Joseph Brown, Aton Veggi, Mog Morton, Bernardo Katstrup, Shauna Holm, Mark Passio, John Soraki, and the goddess Joanna Kujawa. I am so incredibly proud of it, and I invite you to come and have a look. You can find a link on magicalegypt.com. Immaterial. Ancient Egypt was the least material paradigm
fit within the materialist paradigm are simply rejected as immaterial. Think that's so helpful to you?